It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Scott Bourne is joining us, a blast from the past, one of our original Mac Break Weekly hosts and a brilliant photographer. He's joining Renee Ritchie and Andy Iannocco. We'll talk about the next generation iPhone. We're finally getting close. The Apple Watch iOS 11 Beta 5 and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 571, recorded Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. Cardboard hats for dung beetles. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. And by LegalZoom. August is National Make-A-Will Month. Prepare for your family's future. Visit LegalZoom.com/prepare today for a free estate planning kit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Apple news. I got a news flash right here. Breaking news. There's some guy with a cowboy hat sitting next to me. That's not a cowboy hat. That's a Tommy Bahama Panama hat. That's Scott Bourne in studio. My best buddy. Amen. From the earliest days of Mac Break Weekly, Scott was one of our regulars along with Merlin Mann and Alex Lindsay, and I'm just thrilled to see you.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
He disappeared off the face of the earth for a while, is back doing photography podcasts, right?
At PPN, Photo Podcast Network. We got 4 shows a month. My pal Marco Lewis and I do that. So
PPN.
Yeah. Photopodcasts.com. Yes.
PPN. Photo Podcasts.
PPN. The Photo Podcast Network.
.com. Also here, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Great to see you. My other, you're all dear friends. Renee Ritchie, the newest dear friend in the bunch. I've only known him for 5 or 6 years.
I'm not cap nor camera, Leo, but I make it up in enthusiasm.
In enthusiasm. imore.com. Scott is a photo ambassador for the Olympus camera line. This is something new for you because when I knew you, you were shooting, I want to say Nikon, but you said Canon?
Well, I've had all. Yeah, I was shooting DSLRs.
Yeah, big cameras, the heavy ones.
Heavy cameras.
And you told us last time that your doctor said, you better carry something a little lighter around.
11 shoulder surgeries.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he said, I'm the best in the world at this. I can't fix that no more. So he said, you got 2 choices, be a cripple in a wheelchair or get something lighter. And
Maybe he should have mentioned you could carry it on the other shoulder. Did he say anything about that?
I'm right-handed.
Oh, okay. I'm a lefty. I still carry my camera on my right side. But carry I noticed you cameras. Use the sling style where you have it on your hip and you swoop it up like that, right?
Well.
Or no.
This will work any way you want. This is the Pro Advantage strap from Olympus.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
So I'm just.
Do you have to use only Olympus stuff now?
Yes.
But you're happy. I tell you what, if you've not seen Scott's amazing wildlife photography, primarily birds, right?
Yeah, I got bird brain.
You will, once you see it and you then find out, which I did after the fact, that this stuff is shot. With a Micro Four Thirds camera, and the clarity, the crispness, the detail you get blows me away. This is your Instagram, born.scott, BOURNE.SCOTT. At this point, I will never, ever, ever, in fact, I want to throw away all my DSLRs. I will never, ever second guess it. And you have an advantage with Micro Four Thirds because you have an amazing range of lenses. That's a standard from a number of manufacturers. It's not just everybody makes.
Panasonic and Olympus are primarily the Micro Four Thirds. However, there are other third party lens makers available that you can get their stuff. But you know, it's
and adapters are easy to find.
Yeah, it's lighter, it's cheaper. It's smaller.
Well, my wife shoots what you shoot, which is the OMD.
Your wife has excellent taste.
It's a really nice. I'm very jealous. It's the OMD
EM1
Mark II, second generation. Andy shoots the EM1 Mark I.
Yes, he does.
Both great cameras.
Yeah, I mean, and it just goes to show you when I bought that three, I think about it shortly after it came out, and it is one of the most expensive consumer products I have ever bought in my life, and that might even include that doesn't include my cars, but you wouldn't know to look at it. But oh boy, it was one of those things where this is. I'm an unofficial Olympus ambassador, but it was a real Mac-like or iPhone-like experience, me with this camera. It was just, it fit to my hands perfectly. The controls were exactly where I wanted to be. If there was anything I wanted to change, I could customize it so that it really is like Tuco in the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, taking apart all the guns in the store to put together the one that was perfect for him. And oh my goodness. And also just the thing that was holding me back, because I knew that this was the time that I finally think that I'm an okay enough photographer that I can take advantage of a better, like, pro level camera. And I was thinking about Nikons, I was thinking about Canons. Everything that I was reading and everything that had been told to me, both professionally and as a consumer, said, well, the thing is with Micro Four Thirds is that they're not really fast focusing, and they can't really do this and they can't really do that, but within their limitations. And I finally, I had such a good instinct about it that I went forward. And I can't think of, over the years, again, this year I started shooting like action sports, which is something that even the first generation was not supposed to be good at. And you can do that. It's good. It works great.
Why do you see the Mark II? Holy
God. Oh, God. I'm so close to putting money under the mattress for the Mark II, because it seems to be everything I love about the Mark I, plus more megapixels, plus faster, plus all this. And I'll just say the last thing though, the ability to just board an Amtrak train with my laptop bag and have a collection of, it's so compact that I have a collection of lenses in there that is about the weight of maybe one lens had I bought an SL, like a Canon or a Nikon. It's like, why not take the 70-300mm zoom plus the medium zoom plus this fisheye lens, because anyway, I'm enthusiastic. I like this.
I have to say that this comes back to a topic we've often raised on this show, which is computational photography. A Micro Four Thirds sensor is a lot smaller than the full frame sensors, so you're getting less data. But what's changed, even from the EM1 Mark I to the Mark II, is the brains of the operation.
The back end processing speed on all cameras these days is phenomenal. And really where that comes into play, Leo, is things like fast autofocus.
Right.
And fast frame rates. The EM1 Mark II can do 60 frames per second.
What?
60
frames per second. Okay, I just got the A9, the Sony A9, and that does 20. I thought that was a lot. You're really shooting video when you're shooting 60 frames a second. That's video, but you could choose each individual frame as if it were a
Yeah, that's
still.
What the electronic shutter you can do. 60. You can do 18 frames per second
that's
with the mechanical shutter.
And I have to say, and I noticed this with the A9 as well, which is highly computational. You know, they have this stacked sensor. They have all this stuff. You put on eye focus, tracking focus, or any kind of track. You can have face or eye tracking, and you don't have to focus anymore.
Well, another cool thing you can do is you can actually focus by touching the rear LCD.
I love that feature.
You just focus, and you can shoot. You can focus and shoot from here.
And actually, for videography, for shooting video, that's great. The Mark IV, Canon 5D Mark IV, had just added that. And having a touchscreen is great, but then the fact that you're shooting video and then you tap what you want it to be focused on, and it instantly pulls focus, that's Renee, are we leaving you out? Are you not?
No, I was just in my head. I was thinking 10 years since iPhone debuted the feature. Wow.
Okay, yes. That's probably
right. I'm just it's the glacial pace of established industries, even when you have strong incumbents, strong innovators coming in.
I actually think that that's Apple does get deserve a lot of credit for what's happened in the professional camera realm, because if it's in a camera phone, the professionals say, well, why can't we have that, right? And I would bet, I don't know, but I would bet that the processor improvements that Apple's made in the iPhone have ended up benefiting the processor improvements
and don't discount the fact that the iPhone is the number one control app for this camera for remote. I mean, if you have an iPhone,
you can
focus this thing. You can change the aperture. You can set the timer. You can do anything you can do with your fingers.
Oh, that's it's did you show Lisa that?
I haven't showed her yet, but
she uses now. She this is her workflow. She'll take a picture. She'll using Wi-Fi get it over to the iPhone instantly.
Yeah,
and then she can use Snapseed or any variety of filters and publish it. And for I think for a lot of people, that's a more sensible workflow than coming home, putting it in Lightroom, modifying it, and putting it up 3 days later. That is a that's a, the one reason I really have a soft spot for the Olympus, and of course we've owned all the OMDs, and I bought her Mark II, is I had the OM-1, which was a film camera.
Oh, I remember.
It was the smallest film camera out there, 35 millimeter, and it was a work of art.
It had a match needle meter inside of it. Yeah. It was the first camera with a real valuable meter inside.
You can get it, by the way, for $54 now on eBay.
I bought one because it was just such a beautiful object.
Also, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, my first real camera as a kid was an OM2. Back when you could go to like the local, you go to Leechmere, a chain of stores in New England, and buy anything and return it within 30 days for no reason. So that was my camera rental place. So that was I wound up buying an OM2 like 2 or 3 months in a row before they told me, yeah, we're not allowed to sell you any more cameras because you just take them back.
Hit the road, kid.
We should mention that HyperCard is 20 years old, August 11th, 1987. 20 years of HyperCard. Here's a post on the Internet Archive blogs. One of the reasons it's on the Internet Archive blogs is you can still run HyperCard in your browser using, we've talked about this before, the Internet Archive has bootable Macintosh ROMs. You can choose the Mac you want to run, and most of those ROMs come with the Mac emulation comes with HyperCard. So you can, there's a lot of emulated HyperCard stacks on the Internet Archive too. So if there's kids listening, and you want to, find out what? Why do these old folks keep talking about HyperCard? Well, you can literally. I'm now booting up a Macintosh, launching the emulator. Boots a hell of a lot faster than the Mac Classic did, and I can run HyperCard. And you could see this is a stack Seinfeld 1.0. That's how old Seinfeld is.
Yeah,
this is kind of a weird mismatch between the timelines of technology and the timelines of everything else. Seinfeld feels relatively modern.
Culture makes no sense in hindsight.
but if you look at this HyperCard stack of the Seinfeld show, it feels like, good Lord, this is prehistory. This goes back forever and ever.
Being able to build a HyperCard stack was one of the first real programming things I accomplished. And
yes,
Bill Atkinson, being a photographer, I was very keen on what was going on with this. I absolutely think that HyperCard was way ahead of its time and one of the coolest things that happened on the older Macs. And I'm glad you mentioned the history of it because it's just such an amazing thing. You know, everybody takes it for granted now what you can do, but back then it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
but it's also something I wish we get back to, because HyperCard was for people on the Mac. I think it gave it people control over the Mac that they might have had over the Apple, because you would go to someone's house, whether they were an adult or a kid, and they would boot into whatever custom HyperCard stack they had created to do whatever task that they had set that thing up to do. And so the Mac felt like their Mac, as opposed to I'm running the apps that other companies have created for me or are allowing me to create. And if Apple were to create something like that on the Mac these days, oh boy, you'd see in-depth eight-dimensional insanity in about 8 days, and it would just make me so very happy.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the reasons we continue to celebrate Sal Segoyan, AppleScript and Automator. They're really the spiritual successors to HyperCard. Apple seems to have kind of abandoned them. Neither of you went to the Command-D conference? I guess that was last week in we talked about it. It was last week in San Jose.
No, I'm afraid not.
Yeah. But I saw a lot of pictures and stories from that. And I'm glad that Sal is keeping Automator Alive and Apple Script Alive.
He's doing some incredible stuff. If you go to his sites, he's continued the tradition of creating official sites when he was working at Apple that weren't technically official, and he's doing an incredible stuff that automates stuff within the Omni Groups apps. So things that you didn't think you could do, you can automate between iOS and macOS, even on iOS directly. It's just incredible. It's all being done by JavaScript. It's all being done with open technology, so it could be adapted anywhere. He is such an important force, and I don't know what the equivalent of a MacArthur Genius Grant is within our group, but oh boy, he should get the first three of them. He's doing such important work for everybody.
How do you like this? This is my new computer. It's a Macintosh.
You're killing me.
This is the world's biggest.
The Seinfeld icon looks like the Heath Ledger Joker.
This is the world's. Let me just see. Let me get info here. This file here. Actually,
is that the resolution of the Apple Watch? Probably is now.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah.
512 by 342.
Holy cow!
This is a HyperCard on the Microsoft Surface Studio.
Yeah, boy. Wow.
At least it's a touch Macintosh.
Yeah, it's the first touch.
It's the first touchscreen Macintosh. I like it.
That is kind of disorienting in so many ways. Anyway, happy birthday, and thank you, Bill Atkinson. And Bill's around. In fact, we're going to try to get him to come up and maybe do something on the 20th anniversary, because it's such a big anniversary. It was last Friday. 20th anniversary.
Wasn't it the 30th?
No, it's the 11th. So.
No, wasn't it the 30th anniversary?
No, did I say 20th? Yes.
Yeah, 30th anniversary.
No, I feel old. I feel really old. Interesting.
Back in our day.
I remember. Interesting revelation. We talked last week about Apple's quarterly results and how their number two business was services. Oh, thank you, CNBC. But I really, it's really driving me crazy. There's a new thing now. I think Bloomberg does it where you can't, it starts, the audio starts, the video starts, and then it's got a button that says audio. But if you click it, it launches it. It doesn't turn off the audio. It's like,
Doesn't the browser have that? Like Safari has that auto mute every tab button.
I gotta find that button.
I'm a Chrome user, but I'm considering switching back to Safari just to, it's getting to be such a huge problem.
God, well, yeah.
But they want those numbers. They want the play numbers, Leo.
They get them. What, do they mean anything?
It's like Facebook with the autoplay video in the news roll. We have huge, huge numbers on video on Facebook.
Anyway, we were talking about services. This is maybe dampens the enthusiasm for Apple's, quote, services business. According I guess this is coming from Google, right? Google, in an investor's note on Monday, said that Apple pays about $3 billion a year. I mean, Google pays about $3 billion a year to Apple just so it can continue to be the default search engine on Safari and iOS. $3 billion.
Didn't we know that number from Eric Schmidt saying something a couple of years ago?
A couple of years ago, it was $1 billion.
And it doesn't show the value of those customers? Those eyeballs?
I was going to say. Yeah.
Billion dollars. It is, because, of course, it's iPhone. But what it does is it shows you that even in something like services, Apple's number two business, it still stems from the iPhone. It all starts with the iPhone, right?
Because remember, they weren't just talking about that, but they were also talking about, we mentioned this last week, that they didn't break down those numbers, but we know that the lion's share of money they make from services is through the App Store, and they're making most of that money through iOS, and they're making most of the iOS money through like in-game purchases and things like that. So we got a ways to go before Apple can say, hey, look, we're broadening out. We're not reliant on the iPhone. Well, we're not. They can say that we're no longer reliant on iPhone hardware. We're now just reliant on services that you need to buy for the iPhone.
Remember, of course, that the $1 billion that Google paid Apple in the last quarter, $1 billion in a quarter, is all profit. It's all profit.
He's got to have coffee with Sergey once a month.
So you could subtract $4.50 for the Starbucks. So Google may account for as much as 25% of company profit growth over the last 2 years. Google
kind of explains why we haven't seen the enmity between Apple and Google that we've seen between Apple and Adobe.
Yeah. And remember, Jobs said we're going nuclear on Google over Android, blah, blah, blah. That kind of went away when Tim Cook took over. There is
$3 billion to fix that.
There's a tight relationship between the two. I don't know if that also means the Google, if it has anything to do with the Google apps. It sounds like it's just having Google be the default search engine in Safari. And I have a feeling that this number went up partly because of negotiations. Remember when Apple said, we're thinking of moving to Yahoo, or the rumor was, we're thinking of moving to Yahoo or Bing for our defaults. Yeah. That's like, you know.
That's like Daniel Craig saying he's not going to be in the next Bond movie so they can get his salary up.
You think that's what that was all about?
Of course that's what it was all about. Oh. What else is he going to do?
I think we talked about this too.
He's like Bond.
It's going to be very hard to grow the iPhone business in terms of unit sales because there's only so many people on Earth who are willing to have an iPhone. But you can grow the amount of money that each of those customers gives you. And that's through accessory sales. And Apple Watch and Apple TV are both accessory sales in terms of that. It's subscription revenue to Apple Music. It's Google paying you for first placement on search thing. All those things increase the average amount of money you're making per customer on iPhone.
Yeah. Temporarily, just until next quarter in the new iPhone, Apple may in fact be the world's third largest smartphone maker. That's for the first time since 2011. And it's thanks to, of course, number one, Samsung, you know, and has been for some time. But that's thanks to the success of Huawei, a Chinese smartphone manufacturer. They use Android. Well, they use a highly customized version of Android. And success of high-end phones like their P10 and their Mate 9, and, of course, the Honor phones, which are a little less expensive. Huawei shipped 38.4 million smartphones last quarter. Very few of them to the U.S. I don't even know if you can buy them directly in the U.S. And they're certainly not with any carriers that I know of. Maybe they are in the U.S. But most of this is in China and Asia. But Huawei is very, very successful. That may change. Let's see what happens in September. By the way, we're less than a month away.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, soon, Leo. Soon.
It's going to be a big deal. I think you'll see those numbers flip-flop.
Yeah.
I think it's two headlines in a row. I remember this for years, going back 7, 8 years. It was Samsung's the biggest, Apple's the biggest. And right. It was just whether Apple was shipping or Samsung was shipping, and they would go up and down, and it filled a blog post for the day.
Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, Samsung will announce its Note 8, new Note. There are a couple of things that are of interest that are not Apple-related, like can Samsung sell a Note after the exploding Note of...
Oh, come on. We didn't, no trouble whatsoever. Their new tagline is, come on, we didn't mean it.
It ain't going to blow.
No, I just think people have no attention span anymore, Leo. They're looking at 900 other things on a social feed. And did you even remember that they were blowing up until we thought about them selling a new one?
Yeah, right.
Probably not. There's like 900 other crazy things on Twitter today.
I think... Yeah, well, tell me about it. I think Samsung... knew that because they said, we're not going to even change the brand. We're just
didn't.
Yeah. They just, well, because you know you'll forget.
It was, well, it's one dramatic failure. If they have two dramatic failures, okay, then you got to change the brand.
Oh, then you got to get out of the business, if you ask me. I mean, you can't.
Well, I mean, they were confident enough that they said, we are going to actually sell, we're going to sell actual Galaxy Note 7s using components that we had in stock, anticipating a year's worth of assembly and repair. And they were confident enough to say that we think we're going to sell a few hundred thousand of these, at least in South Korea.
They call them the fan edition or something like that?
Yeah.
And by the way, that's fan, not as in a spinning fan, but in a fanatic. Like I'm a
fan. We asked on Android Central, and people, there's such high brand affinity. There are people who just like they were upset. They still were upset. They had to give back their Galaxy Note 7.
Oh, I am. I've had every Note. I love the Note 7. I will buy a Note 8. Absolutely. Mm.
It's also a unique beastie. I mean, if Apple ever decided that we're going to do iPhone 7 Plus or an iPhone 8 Plus that also had something like an Apple Pencil, you know, that actually docked inside the thing, that would be an interesting alternative. I've never been tempted to own a Galaxy Note, but every time I've had one for review, I don't use the pen for the first week, and then I use it for one or two things, and then I'm using it all the time until the end of the month, and I have to send it back. So it's an interesting thing. It's a unique beastie. A lot of people are making decent note size phones. A lot of people are making decent note size phones for several hundred dollars less, but no one is making something that really serves that kind of need.
Well, since we are less than probably, we don't know. Apple still hasn't sent out invitations. They won't for a couple more weeks. What date will it be, Renee? You got a prediction? Is it the first Wednesday after Labor Day, that kind of thing? Is there?
It's the first or second. Usually it's the first. I mean, but you know, Apple can do it anytime they want, especially if they're holding it at their own campus, at the masters of their own destiny. And it just depends on when they have everything lined up for it.
Is the campus done enough that they can hold it now in the new Apple Park?
I'm not sure. I mean, I certainly hope so. I'd love to take a look at that. God, I mean, we've been teased with it. It feels like for years already.
My money's on September 8th.
September 8th.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to look at the calendar because I'm curious. What is that, a Wednesday?
Well, the closest day to September 8th.
That's a Friday.
They have Labor Day, I think, right? And they don't assemble on Labor Day.
I think it's because of Labor Day they'll do it on an odd day. That's what I'm thinking.
Like a Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. Otherwise, it would be maybe the 13th. Which is
the
12th, Wednesday.
Because they do a lot of Tuesdays.
Let's get a pool going.
We should.
I'll take 8. I'll take 7.
Put your chips
just
on 8.
Just don't let Tim Cook play.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, don't let Tim Cook play.
He knows, right?
Do. That way we'll get good deals on our
Tim,
plates.
Tim, how'd you like to get in our big $100 pot? All you got
to
do...
Leo, I'll seal it in an envelope and I'll give it to you and you can open it.
Oh, no, that's not good. Yeah, seal it in an envelope, Tim. That's a good idea. All right, so it's likely no more than a month away, or roughly.
Yes,
it's close to almost exactly a month away.
I think it's going to be big. I mean, we've got 3 iPhones. We've got an Apple Watch with LTE, likely an Apple TV with 4K, HomePod. And whether they re-announce it or not, there's the iMac Pro still sitting on the horizon.
Wow. All right. Let's take a break. And since we have the guy with the iPhone vest in studio with us, Scott Bourne, let's talk about all we know and all we hope for with the next generation iPhone. The 10th anniversary. 10th anniversary, Scott.
10 years since I
10 years.
Did that.
Amazing. In just a second, Annie Anakos here from the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, and from Photo Podcasts. Right?
Yeah.
I got to say, right, Photo Podcasts.
You kind of did that Elmer Fudd-like.
I like this. Photopodcasts.com. Oh, it's so great to see Scott Bourne back in studio. And you're going to stick around because Saturday you're going to do the new screensavers.
It's all about the screensavers, baby.
I think we're going to do a lot of camera stuff on Saturday.
I'm hoping so.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm counting on it. I need a tutorial. How you get those great, that picture of the bald eagle. Mm-hmm. Catching the you knew which one. Karsten said, I have it right here, as a matter of fact. Flying straight at you with a fish in its talon.
Can I just add that I took that from a moving boat at 30-mile-an-hour winds?
And as you, last time we were on, you said, and the thing is coming at a fairly high speed towards you, and it's maintaining focus. That's servo focus. That's amazing. That is pin sharp.
Scott wrote this really nice blog post about just how to make things sharp that has got me remember for the next time that I'm going to be shooting, like, okay, so here's why I've been frustrated, because I'm not as smart as Scott.
I want all my pictures to be that sharp, right? Don't you really? Even if you love the bokeh in the background, you want, you know, creamy bokeh, you still want the subject to be pin sharp. That's kind of the prerequisite, right? That's the first thing. If it's out of focus, it's over. It's not even...
Yeah, it's hard to sell an out-of-focus bird picture. I have a fair amount of experience.
or motion blur, which is, you know, almost inevitable with something flying at high speed. So you use 1/500. How fast is your shutter speed?
Oh, no. My minimum shutter speed for birds in flight is 1/1500th of a second.
Holy cow.
And for a sharp wingtip to wingtip, you're at a 2,000th.
That fast?
That fast.
And do you cheat a little with the focus by having a narrow aperture, or?
You know, generally, because we're shooting at the high shutter speeds, we have to shoot wide open.
You have to be open.
Yeah.
Even if it's daylight.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay.
We got to go with the higher ISO to get where we want to be. But, you know, it's working for me. And
that picture we just showed, which is a mind-boggling picture. If you're listening, you can see it at Scott's website, scottbourne.com.
Thank you.
And just look at his eagle photos. That
you know,
picture.
I love when people say, what camera did you use to take that picture? You know, it must have been a really good camera.
Well,
it was a good camera.
Are you now? I keep saying ambassador. That's not quite right.
It's called the Olympus Visionary Program.
Visionary
Program. I'm the newest member of the Olympus Visionary team. It's quite an honor. In fact, it's the highest honor I've ever received in my career, and I'm grateful for it.
Do you get paid to do that?
I do.
So it's a...
But I want to point out that I switched to Olympus...
Before that.
...in November of last year.
Right.
And I didn't start getting paid till July of this year. So they came to me, not the other way around.
And you've been a great advocate for it long before you had anything to do with
it. Yeah, yeah. It's just recognition, and I appreciate it very much. And, you know, I got my hands into lots of stuff, but I have to say it's a very high honor. And they're very Mac-centric, by the way. They a lot of the folks there are into Mac, so, you know, it's a good marriage.
And chat room's asking, we're going to take a break. We can address this later, maybe on the new screensavers, about post-processing, what kind of post-processing you do. But we'll find out in a minute, okay? Because I know. And I'm going to keep it a secret for a little bit longer while we talk about my doorbell. I have one right here. I should give you one, Scott. You need this.
I would love one of those.
This is the Ring doorbell. Love these. I installed my Ring almost 2 years ago now. And by the way, no handyman but it's nice because the doorbell comes with all the stuff you need. A drill bit. There's a screwdriver. They have a normal screwdriver and a handle, but they also have a proprietary bit, which makes it, so it's locked into your house. What you do is you remove the old doorbell. You got two wires coming out. Actually, this one doesn't even need a wired doorbell because it's got a lithium-ion battery in it, but it's the Ring Pro, is for wired doorbells. The two wires coming out. If you look at this, it's actually so much nicer than the standard doorbell installation. They have a plate that you screw into the door jamb, and then the wires come through the plate. There's terminals there, and this is the doorbell, and it's got contacts on the back. It's got a USB port. That's because this one has a lithium-ion battery. You charge it. It goes about a year on a charge. That's why you could do it without a wired doorbell as well. And then you press this button, and then you pair it. I'm pairing it right now with my Wi-Fi. So this doorbell is on your Wi-Fi network. It's my favorite IoT device. By the way, totally secure. Firmware patches automatically pushed out by Ring. They keep it up to date. Very important. If you're going to get an IoT device, make sure you're getting it from a reliable company that keeps their stuff up to date. Ring does. But once it's paired, you get all this benefit. Because suddenly, now you've got a camera at your front door that not only lights up when somebody rings the doorbell, but even with motion sensors, when somebody walks by. And you can set the range so it can go all the way out to the street if you want. I wouldn't set it onto the street because then every car that goes by will ping you. And you can talk to and listen to anybody at your door, see them. So when I get a delivery, I can see them and talk to them. I can say, leave it there, put it behind a bush, whatever. You can keep an eye on that package. They also make these great kits. This is a Ring of Security kit that includes the new floodlight cam that just came out. The floodlight cam is basically a doorbell without the doorbell, the Ring video doorbell without the doorbell. It has a camera, speaker, microphone, and it has lights that light up when there's motion detected. But they have one extra feature the doorbell doesn't have. So you can see into somebody comes back in your backyard, lights light up. If that doesn't scare them, you're seeing them now. You're anywhere in the world. You're online. On your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, you can see them. And then you can talk to them and say, can I help you? That usually gets them to run away. But if they still don't run away, you can press a button and send a 110-decibel screaming siren, and they guarantee you are now going to leave. It is awesome. Works on coyotes as well, I might add, or bobcats. The Ring floodlight cam. We have a deal. If you get the Ring of Security kit, that's going to include a Ring doorbell. You can get the Pro or the original Ring, and 1, 2, or 3 floodlight cams, and you can save up to $150 off when you go to ring.com/MacBreak. Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. This company is knocking it out of the park. I love these guys. I love their founder, Jamie. By the way, he's a fan of the screensavers, and he told me this. I didn't realize it. He'd been on our show. Jason Calacanis auctioned off an ad on the Twitch show. He asked me ahead of time. Auctioned off an ad on the Twitch show. And Jamie Siminoff, this was pre-Ring, he had another company, bought it and did an ad on the Twitch show. And we met. And I didn't remember that. He said, when I talked to him, Leo, you don't remember me. I said, from what? And he told me, Jamie, yes, you're that Jamie. Now he's got this company. Richard Branson's an investor. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit at ring.com/MacBreak. I am going to give you this. You have somewhere you can install it?
I have a door.
You have a door?
I could use a doorbell.
And you need a door? This is so much better. You know when you buy a house?
Thank you.
And the doorbell, like we bought a nice house. It was a very nice house.
It has a cheesy doorbell.
The cheesiest. It's like they got it at Kmart, right? Every time. Yeah. And it's kind of fallen off, and there's drops of paint where they painted around it, and then every time. That's why I replaced it. All right, moving on. iPhone. First of all, Renee.
Yes, sir.
What's your best guess as to the name of the next iPhone, the high-end fancy one?
I hate making these guesses because it's literally Apple guesses. So they get together, they pick sort of a name, they make up a big list, and then they go through them and they talk out all these names and figure out which one is the best one to go to market with. And sometimes it's the first name they thought of. Sometimes it's not. Like, I believe the recent MacBook was MacBook Stealth for a while before they settled back down to just
thank God.
MacBook. A lot of names sound goofy until you've had them for 10 months. And then
do think that there will be a 7S and a 7S Plus, right?
Yeah, and they could just be iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, and iPhone 8 Pro, because that's a very simple, easy to understand nomenclature. Or they could just be iPhone, iPhone Plus, and iPhone Pro if Apple decides to ditch the numbering scheme. I mean, there's pros and cons to all of these, and I imagine Phil Schiller and Greg Joswiak and everyone are busy hashing that out.
We are lucky because we do have an expert in iPhone naming here. Scott Bourne, in 2006, before the iPhone came out, before it was announced, you knew it was going to be the iPhone. Right?
I did.
You said it's going to be the iPhone. And that was actually a more of a guess because, I mean, there were iPods.
Well, we had a little bit. We had just a touch of inside info.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Nobody's going to remember this. It's watching the show. But this is like eons ago. My little buddy, Merlin Mann, would ridicule me every time I'd say I had an inside source. But I really did. I had an inside
source. Is he still at Apple?
I'm not going to say anything else.
Was it protect your sources? You're smart. Yeah, was it Steve Jobs?
It was not Steve Jobs.
Hey, speaking of Steve, you know, we had I had Walt Mossberg on Triangulation yesterday, which is a lot of fun.
Wow.
He had some interesting stories. Remember, he had quite a relationship with Steve Jobs. And I asked him, and he said, yeah, I knew Steve was cultivating me. I'm a reporter. I've worked. And he said, I never had dinner with him. It was not a social relationship. But Steve, for a long time, would call me every Sunday night. And the first time he called, Walt's wife said, it's Steve Jobs on the line. And by like the fourth or fifth time, she go, it's Steve on the line again. Because it was always, it was their Sunday night. It was an hour and a half minimum conversation with Steve Jobs and Walt Mossberg. If you haven't seen the interview yet, yesterday's Triangulation with Walt Mossberg.
You know why I met Steve Jobs?
How did you meet Steve?
Because of you.
Oh dear, that cannot possibly go well.
You sent me because you were not either available or interested.
To an event.
I went to the iMac unveiling on your behalf.
Thank you.
And during the press conference, they said, "Okay, all you guys from the press, go in this room. We've actually got some you guys can touch."
Nice. And Steve
I'm in
was there,
and in comes Steve with his posse.
Yeah,
and he walks up to me and he goes, "So, I'm Steve Jobs," and I said, yes, you are. And he said, what do you think of the iMac? I said,
this was the first iMac.
This is the first iMac. He goes, what do you think of the iMac? I said, I think it's great. He goes, of course you do. That was it.
That's all you need to
know.
That's
my Steve Jobs story.
That's all you need to know.
And that was all because you sent me. Instead of, that would have been your experience.
I've met Steve years before when he was still at Next and Pixar. The thing actually that impressed me about his friendship with Mossberg is that Steve was fairly, I don't want to say arrogant, he was very confident, and a very high self-opinion. And he always got the feeling he knew he was the smartest guy in the room, which he probably was. And when I met him, he barely gave me the time. I mean, it was social. I spent a weekend with him and Lorene and Reed, who was about two. Our daughter was about two at the time, his firstborn. And I read baby stories to Reed. Lorene and I had, cocktails together. We talked a lot. And Lorene was talking about, at the time, her new vegan food business that she was starting up. And Steve talked to me, but And I don't know if it's, he thought, oh, he's a reporter, I'm not going to give him the time. I don't know what it was, but I could tell he did not think I was too bright. And so it was always, you know, okay, you again. Yeah, I'll talk to you. But he was, I still admire him endlessly. The Steve Jobs Theater is probably where this event will be held in less than a month. I hope they're fixing it up right now. I really do.
That'd be so great.
And if anybody from Apple's listening,
send us. Please.
The reason I sent you is normally I want to be here for those events so we can watch the stream and can comment on it. If you're in the event, you can't cover it.
Right.
As I learned to my embarrassment.
So true.
In 2010. Say no more. I'm just saying it's a new regime. There's new PR people. I would love to go to this event. When you like, you'll go, Renee. You'll be there.
I hope so. I mean, yeah. I never take it for granted or expect it, but it's always nice when it happens.
And Andy, if you get the invitation, you have my pledge. We'll cover your flight out and put you up because you can go. If I know the Chicago Sun-Times never gives you anything for trip, but you can go on our behalf.
They gave him a rail pass once.
He takes the train on the Chicago Sun-Times dime.
I try to get invoice for that MTA fare when I took the loop, waiting 11 years later.
But you would come, Andy, if you got an invite and it's at the Steve Jobs Theater on the new Apple campus, you would go, right?
I'd have to think very hard. I would give that very positive consideration, yes.
Well, let me make it easier for you in one regard. We'd be glad to cover the airfare for that.
Okay.
Anybody who, you know, and Renee, you've got somebody with deep pockets to cover you, I'm sure.
He blew all his money on BlackBerry. No.
I'm very excited. So you think they'll talk about, now the HomePod they said would not be available till December.
Yes.
Do you think they'll talk about it, though? Yeah, they'll have to, right?
I think
they might as well.
Go ahead, Andy.
I think they have to give it its first live fire demo to get people really excited and to get people to, again, put that $350 underneath the mattress for December. I would be really surprised if they didn't take advantage of that. I mean, this is going to be one hell of a, if they announce all the things that they've got in their hip pocket for September, October, this could be a really great event. Even if they can't get people to actually pre-order a HomePod that day, who knows? And who knows? Maybe they would start pre-orders that day. They can get people in the halo effect as they're getting excited about the new iPhone, as they're getting excited about the new LTE Apple Watch. To also, that halo effect will also embrace this device that they hadn't even heard of a few months ago and only got their first in the room, again, live fire. Remember, all we saw was a static object at WWDC. That would be such a great opportunity. Yeah. So I'd be surprised if they didn't have some sort of a live demo of it.
Yeah.
And there was only Apple Music. Music was the entire discussion at WWDC, and there's still Siri capabilities that they haven't gone into at all yet.
Good point.
And the display, and there's all these other characteristics to it.
Sybil in our chat room says, if it's not the Steve Jobs Theater, it'll at least be at the Steve Jobs Dirt Mounds. So,
the capacity standing.
I keep getting the name wrong. It's the HomePod, right?
Yes.
I don't know why I want to call it this Home Hub, partly because it's expected to be a hub for Apple's HomeKit.
I think they're very smartly positioning it, because if you make it a virtual assistant, you're going up against Google and you're going up against Amazon. And if you make it a hub, then it's sort of relegated to people who have home automation stuff. By making it a speaker, you're sort of tapping into that Sonos vibe where everybody needs a speaker, and this is a good speaker. You know, I think it's very subtle and very smart positioning on their part.
Yeah. Also, it's the feature they can definitely deliver very, very well with version 1.0. So if they're selling it as a really good speaker, they'll get people who buy it for that reason will be really, really happy. And then a year later, with a couple or a few different updates, it will start to come into its own as a HomeKit controller or as a smart speaker. But again, that's the one thing they can get people to definitely come in on. It'll be the most awesome speaker of that type they've ever heard. It'll look really, really cool, and it will have an Apple logo on it. Those are three things that a lot of people will spend $350 for.
And we've talked to people who've heard it, Jim Dalrymple, and he's certainly, Jim is a music lover, and I trust his opinion. He says it'll sound very good. He said, did he not say on the show that he would sound better than the Sonos?
They gave us all a Pepsi. Well, they gave a lot of us a Pepsi.
Oh, you heard it too, Renee.
Yeah, there were the Sonos and the Amazon Echo. And the Amazon Echo is not a great speaker.
That's
not close. I don't think anyone expects it to be great. But I would say I think we heard 7 songs, including a couple that were live recordings, not just studio recordings. And it soundly – 2 of them were close-ish, but the other ones, it just soundly – it just annihilated it.
How did they do it? Did they do an A-B switch or something? How did they do it?
So as far as I can recall, they had all 3 speakers there, and the one that was playing would light up. But you could also move around the room to hear how the different speakers sounded in different parts of the room. And then I believe they did a two HomePod demo as well, so you could hear how sort of it would work together and fill a room if you had more than one of them together.
And, Echo, Amazon, and Google, who offer their own solution, are both very aware of the threat. Nobody's looking at Sonos anymore to be the leader in this category, and they're both adding Sonos-style capabilities. Amazon has announced that you'll be able to do that kind of that party mode with an Echo, as well as multi-room listening that syncs up. I think Google has announced the same. I think the Chromecast audio has been doing that for some time. So, and the advantage of both of those is that you can put whatever quality speakers you want on them. If you have a Dot, which is $40, and a Chromecast audio, which is even less, you pair those up with good speakers, powered or an amplifier and speakers unpowered, you could make it as, you could put B&W, $20,000 speakers on there.
Bowers Wilkins would be my choice.
Yeah.
And I will just say that I think Andy's spot on in terms of the speaker discussion, because if they're betting on this baby relying on Siri, I got news for you.
Disappointing.
I am not interested in getting directions to Oslo, Norway when I want to go down the street to the Safeway, which is what Siri does
but
for me.
But you're not
going to
ask
every
for
time.
I think they could make Siri better on the HomePod. You're not going to ask for directions on the HomePod. It's going to be a much more specific
a small subset.
Vocabulary, and so they can make it better. I think they can add all these features.
And the one thing that we talked about before with the computational photography is they're absolutely doing computational audio here.
Right.
They have the Apple A8 chip as an audio digital signal processor, and they're continuously measuring everything that's happening in that room, and then taking apart, analyzing, and projecting audio to match exactly all the readings that they're getting. And That is something that's going to give them an advantage over people who don't have.
No one else does that. That's secret sauce.
Yeah.
And if it does it well, do you think people will care about that? I mean, one thing we know, thanks to Apple and the crappy white iPod headphones, is people don't really care about audio quality.
That's what I'm curious about. Like, I love these Sony headphones. I mean, they're, for me, expensive headphones that cost like $70. But I know some audiophiles that have like $300, $400, $500 headphones. And there is no way you can get me to care about a $500 pair of headphones. You just can't. So I'm willing to go the extra $20 for these. I'm not willing to go the extra $300 for something even better than that. So even though I could take the ABC test and decide that, this is computational audio, it's much, much better than the Sonos speaker. Or this other speaker, I could say, yeah, but for what I want, if I'm going to spend more than $300, I'd much rather now spend $400 or $500 for speakers with actual separation or something that can grow with a bit more of a feature than that. So I don't know how people are going to react to it. But again, I think that the way that Apple creates its products, not just the way it markets its products, but the way that it creates its products, I think a lot of people are going to see for themselves the value in spending an extra $100, $150 on this Apple speaker rather than a really good $200, $250 Bluetooth speaker.
There is an advantage to doing it the way they're doing, because for instance, you listen to music in the kitchen, but it's not a place where you care if it's super high fidelity. A decent speaker like a single HomePod would be fine. But then there are places you go, maybe your living room, where you want to hear it in stereo or even in surround. You want it higher quality. And the capabilities of combining multiple HomePods to give you better sound, that's very interesting. I mean, but maybe that is a small market. And most people put it in the kitchen as this, that's what they do with the Echo.
But it does suggest an expansion sort of thing where maybe you did buy it for $350 just for something in the family room, something casual use, but then you really, really love it. So you decided to buy another one for the bedroom, and then you bought a third one, and you decided to redistribute these as a stereo pair in a really good listening space. So It's a really interesting way of selling audio, and it's very 2017, very 2018. I still have in the corner of my office the stereo that I bought after I nearly killed myself writing my first book when I was like 28, nice. 29.
Nice.
It's a Pioneer. It has lots of buttons. It has this like Star Trek remote. I loved it. And it was in my office using it every single day, but it's just not relevant to the way that I listen to music now. So maybe I spent something like $900. I think there are going to be a lot of people that will spend, let's say, the same amount of money when they decide that they want better audio, but they're going to spend it maybe $100, $200, $300 at a time by adding little speakers here and there, by adding automation here and there.
That's the Sonos model, isn't it? Sonos gets you because it's incremental.
Oh, they got me, Leo.
I know. This is what's killing many of us. Thousands of dollars when you add it all up on Sonos speakers, and they're about to be obsolete.
Apple hasn't done home theater yet. So, and most of my Sonos is in the home theater, so okay. I'm not desperate yet, but I'm getting there.
Yeah. So it's one of these rumors. It's a little more than a rumor, and it's probably not surprising that anybody's paying attention. There's a company, Inventec Appliances, that was always rumored to be, even before they announced it, the supplier for the HomePod, the manufacturer. The president of Inventec Appliance, David Ho, gave a press conference yesterday, and he didn't say the word HomePod, but he said a high-profile smart home device that will launch sometime in December. We're going to have a hard time making them. They'll be limited supply initially. We're having, it's not going to. Let me read the exact quote. You can determine what he's saying. We will finally ship the smart home device this year, but its contribution will be, this is to their bottom line, this is their analyst call, Inventec, will be fairly limited, and hopefully that will improve next year. Inventec Appliances will likely only ship some 500, this is an analyst now, 500,000 units of the HomePod this year, which, that's 500,000. I don't know if there'll be demand. There probably will be. Apple.
It's incredibly restricted shipments as well. Like Apple is only shipping it to a few countries that have English as a primary language.
Because of Siri,
Well, because of Siri, but also because of supply. I mean, they're pretty good at matching the amount they can produce to the territories that they want to put them in.
I hope we're not going to see some similar, I bet we will, similar restrictions on the new iPhone. Although the latest rumor is it will be shipping exactly the same time the other ones will be, and there's plenty of them, and the rumors go back and forth.
Depends on what they want to do with the stock price, Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. For both of those things, if you've already decided that whatever the new super iPhone is going to be, or however the HomePod comes out, you better be there the first hour, the first day, because you're going to have to. I do think you're going to have to wait a month or two if you don't get in on the first day. I mean, I don't know as anybody in this, as Renee will confirm. Apple doesn't, unless they're giving you hardware in advance, they don't call you. If anything, I would get maybe 2 or 3 days notice that can I be home to sign for a package on a day that something is due to ship. Otherwise, if I really want to get it early, I'm going to have to order it as fast as possible. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to be waiting for months. So that's why I didn't get to write about AirPods for a good long time, because didn't buy them the first day and had to wait like 2 or 3 months before they were in the store. So that's my advice to everybody else. Again, get that money under a mattress. Get ready to do it if you really are that interested, particularly if you want to, if you think that there's a possibility that you're going to make this the big Christmas present to your spouse or to one of your kids. Again, you're going to have to throw a few elbows in virtual space to make sure you get at the headlight line.
Do you have banks in Boston, Andy? I'm just curious.
Why the mattress?
we are but a simple Puritan fishing colony. We feel as though to put our money in banks is to earn money that we have not earned through God's
Okay,
work.
Thank you. Just checking.
So I asked Renee, Andy, do you have any thoughts about what the next generation iPhone will be called, the high-end model?
I wouldn't be surprised if there hasn't been serious discussion about doing away with the numbering completely.
That's where we seem to be kind of converging, right?
Yeah, because they've done that before. They remember they did away with that for the iPad. It basically makes older hardware feel a little bit frumpier than it actually is. If you just simply call it iPhone Plus 2017 edition, that's okay. That's like the fourth or fifth syllable, by which point no one is listening anymore. You have to ask yourself, at what point is it useful to them to keep numbering these things? I wouldn't be surprised if they were to do a new name for this new higher end phone. I'm sure that they would want to keep the pedigree that they've been doing before, like the Mac Pro or the Mac it would be the iPhone Pro or the iPhone Edition. Edition would help to make it sort of go down a little bit easier that these things are in such short supply and that they're charging so much more for them. I have to say that I'm, contrary to what I was talking about several months ago, I'm warming to the idea of having an iPhone Edition, so long as they're using this as an opportunity to really push the hardware forward. And not just a way to, we're going to make the, as long as they don't make the same mistake that I thought they made with the watch, which is to say, we took the same molds, it's the same watch, we just put a more, I was about to try to make a obscene. Ten Commandments analogy. basically, don't lust after aluminum, lust after gold. Look, don't focus on the world problems. Look, here's something gold shiny. So I'd be bored.
So addition would make sense from the watch standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to say, here is something we can't manufacture this in quantities where we can deliver tens of millions per quarter. Here is something we can build only about 5 to 10 million copies of. Well, I'm not saying ceramic. I'm not saying gold. I'm saying that here is a new sensor technology. Right. Here's a new camera technology. Here is something that would really help out ARKit. Here's a way that we'll actually be able to see in 3D. And that will let you take an advanced look at what ARKit can do with people that have these new special kinds of phones, have this special extra hardware, but it doesn't commit them to making sure they can source 100 million copies of this component. It also doesn't commit them to being able to ship this to every single store and have it waiting for everybody. So what I'm looking for in every manufacturer, not just Apple, is again something that really pushes phones forward, because it's really, really hard now to a lot of the most exciting stuff that's happening is how good a phone can you make now for $300, for $400, for $200. And a lot of manufacturers are doing some incredible hardware for half the price of any prestige level phone. So it would disappoint me if they were saying, we just made it more elegant, we just made it more exotic, we just made it more, you know, design pat on our back about how good designers we are. If they said that if we had the chance to only make 1 million copies of an iPhone and we had the chance to make it a little bit thicker and charge a few hundred dollars for it, what would we do with that opportunity? And the answer is not, we'll pour a different material into the mold and pretend that it's really special.
I have a theory, but I'm going to let our expert answer before I, because you came up with, you knew it was the iPhone. What do you think the 10th anniversary iPhone will be called?
iPhone 10.
10. You think 10?
Or an X.
X.
Yeah. That's my pick.
I'm thinking, so you can go by, as Andy does with the addition, that maybe they would follow their naming scheme for their watch. I'm thinking, remember, the new iMac is the iMac Pro, right?
Yep. Yeah, and Pro is probably my second choice.
Pro might be interesting. The iPhone Pro, focusing especially on the camera.
From the marketing perspective, Andy's right on. I mean, it's definitely harmful to legacy sales to have you look at an iPhone 4 as, you know, something that's really no good because it's so old.
Right.
If you take that numbering system away, that makes selling, well, you know, older phones.
They did it with the SE, right?
Yeah.
The SE
yeah.
is really a 5S, but they call it the SE.
Right. And I think that, you know, marketing drives a lot of the decisions at Apple, so it's a good bet. But I think the number X is real popular in overseas. You see X real bold. I think I think that particularly in China, that's popular.
I bought a car with an X in the name.
What was that?
The Model X.
Ah,
yes, yeah. You did.
Yeah.
We've all decided that iPhone AF is just off the table, right?
AF?
Apple would never go there.
iPhone is A. Never mind.
That's the new autofocus mode.
Oh, yeah. Autofocus. Oh, I'm sorry. My mind.
iPhone autofocus. You'll be able to do bird photography. There's a Scott Bourne mode on the new iPhone.
Scott Bourne mode. There ought to be. Oh, I love the speculation, and I always like it as we get closer to these events, you know, that gets more heated. But I am very excited. I have to say, this is the first iPhone I've been really excited about in a few years.
Well, would you like me to channel our friend John C. Dvorak to have him chip in?
What do you think he would say?
That'll never work. No way. Who would buy anything that expensive?
Get a Windows phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, Windows. There is, there is a new MacBook Pro.
Before we move on, Leo, can we just talk about Blush Gold?
Yes, because we were, so the last rumor, and this is really, the rumors are now flying fast and furious.
Fast and furious, yeah.
So much so that the latest rumors are negating the previous rumors. The last rumor was all of the phones would be available all at the same time, all in the same three boring colors.
Yes.
Not so.
But juxtaposed with that is like a mirror finish rumor.
I really love that. I would buy that.
Because they'll be in glass for inductive charging. So glass plus mirror looks really hot, but also copper, which yesterday they were saying might be called blush gold. And I can get used to almost any name, but that one's going to be hard for me. But the idea of a copper colored one, I think, would be interesting given, the previous palettes.
As opposed to rose gold.
Yeah, just because rose gold is like 3 years old now, Leon. Fashion just moves.
Will there still be jet black and the matte black, whatever they call that?
I don't know, because if it's under glass, it'll probably. I don't know what
those are metal finishes. Yeah, you can't really do those on.
It could be shiny black. I just don't know if they'll use those same names.
Right.
Maybe they'll have all new names: blush gold, black gold. I don't know.
So what? What's our So assuming it's glass because of the inductive charging, it can't be metal.
They have a patent for inductive charging through metal, but as far as I know, no one's ever fielded a phone using it.
No one's done it. You could, if you're doing inductive charging, have a cutout of some kind. Google did that with the Pixel, and it's ugly as sin. I don't really like the cutout.
Yeah, they did antenna lines and the cutout, which is like the two things you could avoid.
If you do glass, you don't need to do antenna lines either, do you?
No.
Because it's transparent.
No. It's RF transparent, yeah.
But the problem with glass is it shatters.
Peanut butter on both sides of the bread.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's going to fall.
The argument they're going to release them all at the same time does make sense, and here's why: because they sure as heck aren't making any computers that anybody cares about. They got nothing else to work
on. You and I are in the same boat. Notice all the Windows machines around me these days. It's when you have this Surface Studio, which, by the way, Consumer Reports withdrew its recommendation for all the Surfaces because of high return rates and reliability rates.
Microsoft did counter with a press release that did seem to put that in better context.
Yeah, and then Paul Theriot had an article we'll talk about tomorrow on Windows Weekly saying not only did Microsoft lie... lie about how all the issues they were having with Skylake. They said it's Intel's fault, the Skylake processor's got bugs of bugs. And then Lenovo said, talking about? It's working fine. We don't have a problem with it. Yeah. And I had a Surface Book that had all those power issues for 8 months before Microsoft could fix it. That's the one that Microsoft famously said was a tough computer science problem to solve. I love the form factors Microsoft's doing with the laptop, the Surface Book, the Surface Pro, and the Surface Studio is what an iMac should do. And it'd be easy for Apple to do that, except for this part, the touch part. But the fact that it lies flat like this is awesome, right?
You're killing me with this thing.
I know. It's fantastic. I'm still not – I still would prefer to use Mac OS. I'm sure you would,
I would too. Over Windows. I would like this with a Mac OS.
Yeah.
And to put it in a little different phrase, I have more computers than I need but fewer than I want.
N-1, Scott. N-1.
Andy, you're saying something?
No, I was just saying I showed you the that Lenovo Carbon notebook, and I love it so much. But the thing is, when I switch, I've got my iMacs, my Macs here in the office, and it's like Windows 10 is really, really good. It's very, very serviceable, but it's not Mac OS.
It's not Mac.
I spent an entire weekend going through all kinds of Hackintosh techniques to try to get Mac OS running in a virtualization mode on the Carbon, because if I could get, oh my God, it so kicks the ass of every MacBook I've had for the past 2 or 3 years.
The real point is that the PC ecosystem is so rich.
Right.
There are any kind of hardware you want, you could get, because there's thousands of manufacturers. Apple's the only company. Apple makes choices. Every manufacturer makes choices. The problem is, if you don't like Apple's choices, there's nowhere else to go.
Fistful of Linux. Dongles, anybody?
Fistful of dongles. You know what? Renee, that's my solution. I don't use Windows. And even with I got a brand new Lenovo. And the Linux has come so – people are going to think I'm an idiot. Linux has come so far that the current Linux kernels support Kaby Lake, the latest Intel processors flawlessly. Nowadays, when you install a good Linux, and there I'll give you a couple of names, but a good Linux on a today's state-of-the-art laptop, everything works out of the box, even power saving. Stuff that traditionally has been hard, the cameras, the trackpad, the screens. You're not running Xconfig.
Nerds on a mission, Leo. They get it done.
It really works. I just tried something called Solus. I was up last night installing this. Their third version came out. For somebody who's a Windows user, going to Solus Linux, S-O-L-U-S, would be completely transparent. I use a version of Arch called Antergos, installed on my ThinkPad 470S, the latest ThinkPad with a Kaby Lake processor, flawlessly. And the thing is, it gives you some of the features that you like in the Mac, that I like in the Mac. All the languages, programming languages available, a real command line, not this goofy Windows command line. But I have to say the real problem is the lack of application software that I'm used to. I want to run Adobe's Creative Suite, and I can't.
Cloud people are mostly insulated now, but everyone who wants to run to the metal still has that problem.
That's true. If you're running Chrome, no reason not to use Linux. And like, I could set up Linux for somebody who's never used it. Maybe using this Solus.
They would barely know it was Linux.
They would barely know. They'd say, oh, it's Windows. Well, it's a weird Windows, but I like it.
Yeah.
Doesn't crash.
But also points out a unique advantage of the Mac that it's not like the Mac App Store is the most holy way to get software ever created. Talk to a developer if you want the counter argument to that. But I do admit when I was going back to the Lenovo and trying to get it set up the way I want, there is a Windows App Store, but it's woefully incomplete. You still have to go to the Wild Wild West and find individual developer sites to get the apps that you want. I did miss the idea of, I'm going to pull down the Apple menu. I'm going to go to the App Store and do a search for the type of app that I want. And I will probably find the thing that I want in this safe certified store, as opposed to Windows, where I will definitely find it. But I have to make sure that I don't get tricked into going to like download.com where the code has been infested with adware or anything that. So it's kind of a mess. I don't think between Linux, Windows, and Mac, I don't think there's any reflection of the ideal of computing. There's no bigger nerd than me, but even I've got Linux. I love my Raspberry Pi, but it would take a lot for me to decide to switch to Linux because there's all those times where I just want to sit down. I just want to do the thing that I've set down this computer with. I don't want to have to investigate which.
Modern Linuxes have stores, you know, and they have update software. You don't really need to go to the command line. Do me a favor before you send that X1 back. Just download Antergos or Solus and put it on there and play with it for one day. And I'd just be curious what you think. I think people have an impression of Linux, well, you do from the Raspberry Pi because you're using Raspbian, a more modern install is, I would say, is absolutely on a par with OS X and Windows
X. But that's the other problem that you have to ask yourself the question, okay, well, which version of Linux do I want? And then which window manager do
it's
I
too
want?
Too much choice.
And then, you do want the ability to say, I took this out of the box. I answered a few questions and I'm up and running.
Try Solus, S-O-L-U-S -project.com. Install their default budgie desktop, was designed to look like and feel like Windows. I have a feeling it's very easy install. And I have a
feeling. Can you boot it off a flash drive?
Yep.
Okay.
You can.
I've got Debian running off a flash drive. So
yeah, it's slow. Of course, if you installed it on the X1, you see. And by the way, with TLP, I'm getting better battery life on my 2017 ThinkPad than I got with Windows. So
lighter load.
Yeah. Well, it's partly a lighter load, partly. What's really happened is that Intel has taken over much of these power management. A lot of this stuff is now moved into hardware. So like the function keys to turn up the screen or turn up the volume, the operating system doesn't have to know about that. The hardware handles that all now. So it looks exactly the same on any operating system. The world is changing a little bit here. And I think desktop operating systems, your preconceived notions, I think, have changed. Not that I'm proselytizing or anything.
Yeah. No, but that's like I'm fond of saying. I think that anytime you're going to spend more than a burrito's worth of money on a piece of hardware, you really have to defend every dollar that you spend. So even if you're so thrilled with Windows or you're so thrilled with your Mac, before you spend $1,000 or $2,000 on a new desktop or a new laptop because you spilled Diet Dr. Pepper on the keyboard of your old one, that's a good opportunity to look at the alternatives. Because even if you can't possibly be swayed into switching to Windows or switching to Mac, the fact that you took another look at Mac will remind you of the reasons why you like Windows and the reasons why you took a look at a Windows machine and said, "Ugh, but it's just not really very polished." And I really wish I had that sort of peak I'm missing like the simplest things, just the ability to, I've got pictures that I've put on the hard drive, and I just want to tap this. I keep wanting to tap the space bar just to preview them, and I can't do that on Windows. But there's a utility that I can get for that. Like, I don't want to look for that utility. So again, always do not do something simply because you're in the habit of doing it. You got to know the reasons why you do the things that you do. That is the key to surviving 20, 30, 40 to 80 years on this planet.
Well, as Guy Kawasaki said a long time ago, software sells hardware. And I mostly use Macs because there's a couple of products,
there's programs, yeah,
that I need that only run on Macs. Now, those particular products in a few weeks are going to also be available on Windows.
We're going to talk about that when we get to your picks.
And I'm going to tell you
that will change your tune, won't
that,
it?
It's very likely that one of these things is in my future.
If you use Chrome or a Creative Cloud,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter what OS you're
using. If you're using Adobe products, it's 99.9% the same exact experience.
Like using WeChat on a phone.
Yeah. I wish Adobe would make a Linux version. By the way, another issue was raised. I read this blog post. I think I found it in Hacker News this week from a guy called Eclectic Light Company, Max Painting and More, who he raised a really good point, which is Apple has done a very poor job documenting Mac OS. It's changing a lot. Remember in the early days of Mac, you had Inside Macintosh. You had a 6-foot shelf of very detailed documentation on the API, all the calls, how it worked, but Apple, partly because I think it's changed so rapidly and there have been so many updates, but they just stopped documenting it. And that is a big problem. It's one of the things Microsoft does a lot better. And frankly, believe it or not, Linux does maybe best of all. The Arch Linux wiki is amazing. And that's one of the reasons I like Linux, because you get this great documentation. Do you agree, Renee? Do you feel like there could, you've made your living documenting stuff Apple has not documented?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they have gotten way better. They've been putting concerted effort over the last couple of years, but I think a lot of that has gone to iOS because it's just a much bigger platform for them. But developer.apple.com and the developer publishing group, they've done a lot of work to sort of modernize those pages. If you remember a couple of years ago, that stuff was old. And now you're getting a lot more, and it's updated a lot faster now, and there's more of it. But I think it'll take them a while before they get through the backlog.
He's particularly concerned about APFS, the new file system, which is barely documented. And he also mentions, remember, LaunchD was the key to Mac OS. Now he says a large proportion of tasks are scheduled and dispatched by something called DAS and CTS, which are barely even mentioned in Apple's latest developer documentation. A busy part of Mac OS, which doesn't even appear to have a name. And that I think that's a problem.
I think some of it's because they're concerned with proprietary.
Well, they're proprietary, but that doesn't mean you can't document commands and how to use them and how they work.
I think I heard once from a guy that they're concerned that they're
reverse engineering.
Yeah, that they're that fanatical about protecting their deal.
And most to their credit, I mean, most of the users who use Apple products don't care if they know how LaunchD works or whether LaunchD
is deprecated. I think it's worth talking about.
Well, the implementation detail to them, it's just, you turn on your machine and that part should work.
But developers need to know it, and we power users need to know.
Totally agree. Yeah, and I think it's just, again, modernizing and getting it through that backlog of activity that they have. And most of the resources, like with the Mac App Store, go to the iOS counterpart because just the sheer scale of that as a platform.
Let's take a little break. We're going to have more with Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannocco, Scott Bourne. Very nice to have you in studio. Came all the way down from the Pacific Northwest. You going to go run back up for the eclipse on Monday?
Well, for reasons different than you think. I'm going to go back up.
You don't want to see the sun go out?
Actually, I love to photograph the stuff on the ground when the sun goes away because the light changes so much. I don't point my camera at the sun.
Oh, that's
I
smart.
I put my camera at the stuff on the ground because it's never going to look like that again. And I don't want to be in the total eclipse because, oh, yeah, it's dark and you can't use your camera.
But so even a partial eclipse is
enough. A partial eclipse is perfect for what I want to do, which is I'm going to try to photograph some birds down in an estuary close to where I live with that weird light on them.
Do the birds act differently during
the eclipse? Oh, they're going to go nuts.
They go nuts.
The birds are going to lose their tiny little bird brains over this.
Yeah.
Because they
get quiet all of a sudden. Well, they don't know if it's night or what.
Keep in mind that they, you know, birds, most people don't know this, birds actually navigate by the stars.
Yeah.
It's been proven since the 1950s. And if it goes dark, they start looking up going, am I supposed to go somewhere?
Where's the stars?
Where's the highway? Wait. And then it's going to like undark again. They go, well, that was kind of fast.
You know who else is going to go crazy?
Who?
Dung beetles.
Dung beetles are going to lose their minds.
They just... I was reading this morning. They just discovered that dung beetles navigate by the Milky Way. So when a dung beetle, and the way they found this out, they put little cardboard hats on them. I am not kidding. Dung beetles, when they roll a ball of dung, you found it. How'd you find that so fast, Carson? They roll it in a straight line.
Yep.
That's the shortest distance between two points. But how do they know what a straight line is? During the day, I guess they can use the sun or whatever. But at night, which is most, there are nocturnal dung beetles. So they went to the nocturnal dung beetles, and they navigate by the Milky Way. In fact, the straight lines parallel the line of the Milky Way, and they put little hats on them, and then their lines went all crazy.
You know, the things you can learn on MacBreak Weekly. You can become a very well-rounded individual listening to this show.
I want a little cardboard dung beetle hat. That's all I'm saying. Huh? That's our title? Okay. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you are in the market for a new home, you know one of the steps, unless you're Scott Born Rich, is you got to get a mortgage. You got to get a home loan. Merlin always used to mock you. And
I know. Say, I miss Merlin so much.
The yacht wax and all
would
of
you,
that.
You know, I he drove me crazy, but I love him. I
miss him. We gotta find Merlin.
Is he out of the witness protection program yet?
I don't know what happened to him. He's such a great guy, but I think he didn't want to come on anymore because he said, "Well, I don't have anything to say." I said, "It doesn't matter. You always have something to add."
Remember when we were at the House of Prime Rib and somebody ordered fish? I'll just leave that memory for you.
I totally remember that. I will never forget that. But you'll just have to imagine our. All I'm saying is if you're having dinner with Merlin Mann at the House of Prime Rib, do not order salad, do not order fish, do not order anything but meat.
You'll be called something akin to a cat.
It's House of Prime. You order the prime.
The prime. Anyway, our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you are like me, you need a home loan to buy a home, or maybe you have a home and you're looking at a refi, I want to point you in the right direction. The best mortgage lender in the country, quickenloans.com. And you just look at those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards. And I mean, I'm not making this up. For 7 years running, number one in customer satisfaction and loan origination. I think for the last 4 years, number one in loan servicing. I mean, they really are beloved. They've created a product that makes me love them even more because it's for people like me. It's for the geeks in all of us. A home loan approval process is entirely online. You do the entire thing on your phone. Even like the paperwork that you would normally have to go to the attic to get the check stubs, the pay stubs, or your bank statements or whatever, that all is submitted to online automatically. Quicken Loans has trusted partners with everybody. So all you have to do is say, yes, tell your bank, yes, send them the information they need. And then because it's all online, it's all computerized, there's no human there, you know, crunching the numbers on a, I always imagine them on one of those calculators. You have to pull the handle to get it to, you know, I don't have to imagine it. That was it. Literally, our loan officer had a calculator with amortization tables built in. It was going, now, I think your money. No, you don't have to do that anymore. The whole thing is on the screen, the APR, the monthly payments, the term of the loan, and they calculate what you're eligible for in seconds. Based on income, assets, and credit, they're going to give you all the home loan options for which you qualify almost instantly, in a minute or two, which means you can do it at an open house. You could say, I want to buy this house. Honey, let's get this house. We don't have a loan. No problem. Go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak, and you will know minutes later what loan's the right for you. The whole idea is to apply simply, to understand fully, make this completely a transparent process for you, and then mortgage confidently. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030. I do, though, I'm going to call them. I want them to add some sound effects so it goes while it's calculating. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be.
Rocket sounds.
RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Lift the burden of applying for a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030. And we thank them for their support. Mac.
Don't they just have like weekly. Mortgage minus one square go for mortgage engine? That'd be awesome.
All right, seeds and stems. The news stories that sank to the bottom of the pile this week.
Are we going to talk LTE too? Because I still
want to talk LTE watch.
Two more. Yeah, it's KGI and CNBC, Leo, and the same form factor, which means I'm not going to be crying, weeping. For all my lost bands at the bottom of Steve
I
Jobs
saw that,
theater.
Yet I wonder if you're going to add an LTE radio to a watch and not increase the battery capacity, how's that going to work?
So, I mean, they were really smart with GPS because GPS was a huge drain on batteries traditionally. But what they did is just arrange it to be super smart so that it would only sip GPS. Like when your arm broke the surface of the water, it would take a GPS hit. Or whenever you did a certain amount of movement, it would do a GPS hit. And what I'm hoping is, I mean, there are certain things that they won't be able to avoid. Maybe they could do low bandwidth or something for things like streaming music. But a lot of times it just needs to do periodic calls to make sure that certain amounts of data are up to date, preloading that into your watch because they already have that intelligent scheduling system, and then let you go on your way. So I'm sure it will be a hit, but I'm hoping they manage the amount of hit as best they can.
Zach Hall, 95 Max, says they'll same form factor, 38 millimeter, 42 millimeter. The non-obvious change from the existing.
Yeah, it's Ming-Chi Kuo.
That's KGI. Okay.
Yeah.
John Gruber, CNBC also at Daring Fireball, he hinted there'd be a new form factor, but he then said no, not this time. And Gruber's well connected. Go ahead.
There's always future form factors.
Yeah, Alex. I was just going to say
that. What I don't even think it necessarily needs to be an LTE radio. They can do a 4G or even a 3G radio in there for all the things that would benefit a watch, which is not going to be necessarily streaming. You're not going to be streaming video on this thing. You're not going to be downloading racing games on this thing. Really, most of what this is going to be used for is iMessage, mostly text and emojis at that. For communicating fitness data and position data live, these are not things that you necessarily need LTE speeds for. So I have no inside information, and I don't. We're getting this from sources that are usually pretty good with rumors, especially this close to what we expect to be a launch date. But it bears thinking that even if we're thinking about LTE, LTE on a watch doesn't need to mean the same thing as LTE on a phone.
Actually, Ming-Chi Kuo says no 3G, only LTE.
Yeah, so the logic that I heard, and we can sort of toss it around and see if it makes sense, is two things. One is for power efficiency, you need to have ubiquity of network. Anytime the radio can't reach the network is where it starts to increase power and waste a lot of it. So if the LTE networks are better rolled out than 3G or 4G networks, then it is a power savings. And also LTE allows for much better race to sleep. So you can turn the radio on, get the data you need, and turn it off really fast, which allows it not to consume as much power as it would if it had to stay on longer to transmit the same amount of data.
Well,
I don't know.
3 weeks. I presume this will all be announced. This isn't going to be the year they have two events, is it?
They only do two when they absolutely have to because it's a lot more work for them and for people who have to go to the events.
Right. I expect we'll hear a little bit about the iMac Pro. They pre-announced that WWDC. Did they say at that time when they thought the iMac? They said this year, right?
Yeah, end of year.
Okay, so that would be appropriate to mention that.
There's 19 people, I think, who pre-ordered that.
How many people outside Apple, though?
All 19 of them.
Would you like a new Mac Pro? They did say next year, we're sorry about the old Mac Pro. The next year, we got a new one. What's interesting, we're starting to see Geekbench results that are labeled Mac Pro, not iMac Pro, but Mac Pro. They're using the new Intel i9, which is still a Skylake processor, but it's one of those 18-core The Core X processors.
You'd figure they'd know better than to Geekbench at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that just gives it away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You think it's bogus? You think it's just somebody...
I think it's an interesting data point. I don't think it's terribly significant.
It's from a user named Surfin' China.
Well, I would just, you know, bet the ranch on Surfin' China.
Surfin' China. It's identified as a Mac Pro 6.1. Renee, is that's a new model, right?
I would have to check what yours is. I don't remember the names of the Mac Pro models.
Mac Pro 6, and it's a.
If yours is 5.1, then we're in business, Leo.
I don't know how easy it is to spoof Geekbench, but this seems to have a lot of detail on it that I don't know.
I mean, it's possible they're manufacturing when someone got a hold of it in the factory and ran Geekbench, not realizing that everything that Geekbench does, I believe by default, gets sucked up to their server.
32 gigs of DDR4 2133 megahertz RAM in this one. You know, it's this sixth generation, but new 10 cores in this case, 20 threads, i9 processor.
Well, also, if they are talking about 2018 for release of the iMac Pro, this could be the stage at which they make a bunch of them for testing and for deep soak testing purposes. So maybe there's a batch of a couple hundred they're just cooking out. And once again, someone just decided to fire up and put it on a Geekbench. I would be shocked if this would. This is not as dumb as leaving an iMac, leaving a Mac Pro behind at a bar, German bar in San Francisco.
Or HomePod's firmware.
Somebody's saying the 6.1 is the trash can model, but so it wouldn't be a new model, but that is a new processor. So I don't know. We'll see. You know, maybe this is just Surfin' China's a smart cookie. I got just this morning, as I sat down to do iOS Today, I got beta 5 of iOS 11, and it's going out across the board. Anything, what, Renee, is new in beta 5?
I'm losing track, because one of the things when you're
reviewing
something...
You just got beta 4 last week.
I know. I believe in beta 4, they started fixing the big things that were bothering me, which is like the notifications. You couldn't swipe to access the notifications anymore, and that was super annoying. And I think since the last beta, you can now swipe to open or swipe to clear individual notifications on the lock screen. So it sort of like reminds me of iOS 7, where people are like, no, too thin. And they slightly thicken the font. They're fixing a lot of little things. Like, they're fixing bugs, of course, but they're also changing UI things that I think people found the most egregious.
One thing was disappointing when I had to beta 5. But remember, you're on a beta. This is not the... now it says my smart keyboard is not supported. I'm using the Logitech Slim Combo. This accessory is not supported as soon as I
connect. Got that with a lightning cable on one of the betas, and I just had to keep unplugging it and plugging it in. But it's one of those, like, people, someone today tweeted me and said, I know you always say you can never trust any beta, but can I trust this one? No, not this one either, because the next one could be terrible. No matter how good this one is, the next one could be terrible. If you're asking the question, don't beta.
So Megan says I'm a dope, but was this capability always in there? Now when you swipe up, you can swipe up to get the task manager instead of just double tapping.
So you swipe up once to get the new dock, and swipe up from the bottom to get, I forget what they call it. I think it's still the app switcher, but and you get all your saved spaces and your app windows and your control center.
When did they re-add that? Because that was something that kind of bugged me, is that I couldn't, I'm so used to doing that. Swipe up instead of the double tap. I don't like the double tap because it's a physical.
I never did a double tap. I was always swiping.
So they didn't take it out? I just didn't know it.
I was double swiping, so I don't know if that's a false positive or not. Okay. I would swipe up to get the menu and the dock, and then I'd swipe up again to get control center.
And then the world's dopiest app store icon. It looks like a campground symbol.
It does.
It looks like, see that, Scott?
It looks like a bench at the campground or something.
It's three,
like how to make your firewood
three
dope.
Sticks.
Yeah, I see that. It's very, very reliable. When I wake up and I check Twitter for the first time, I know that there's a new beta or a new OS release, when most of my feed is people complaining about like a new icon or that the calculator buttons are now round, and that's sickening to them.
It's little stuff like that. Any big stuff? The maps icon now shows the Apple Park. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I would do that if I were Apple. That's not functionality change.
Yeah.
But so... Show that again, Carson, because I'm looking at it. I get it. There's a ring there. I get it. Okay. So now it's still 280, which is the highway that goes right by the Apple campus, the interstate. But now it's got a circle there, which is obviously, if you ever...
If you spent like a gazillion billion dollars on your ring, you want to show it.
You want to show off the ring.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be a few little things. I feel like the fact that they did these two, 4 and 5, in such rapid cadence implies to me they're very close.
Yeah. Usually that kind of velocity either indicates that there was a huge Titanic problem with the last one, or they're now at the, okay, all the stuff that we were putting off because it was an easy cosmetic fix. Now that we know that we don't have an all hands on deck situation, let's wrap this up, figure out what we're going to fix, what we're not going to fix, and then ship this thing.
Was there not a rumor? I'm looking for it. I don't see it, that they would have it out on the day of the eclipse next Monday. The final, is that, am I crazy?
I'm not sure that they wouldn't expect the eclipse to delay a couple of days to
suit the Yeah, I mean, usually they'll put out a version, then they'll stop updating it for a few weeks, and people start to get nervous. But it's just because, you know, the Gold Master is ready,
it's
for
locked.
The event.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, normally they would ship iOS 11 either at the event or at the release.
The Gold Master usually comes out at the event because it includes things that are specific to the hardware that they're showing up for the first time. The developers then have
that.
A couple weeks, and then it comes out. Usually 2 days before the new phones are released, just so that people have time to download it, you know, sort of stage the download before the new.
So did I dream that it was going to come out on Monday, or was there? Android O. That's it. I'm doing too many shows. I have to stop. Android O.
Android
or thank you, Carson.
Orangutan. Do we have a name yet? Is it Oreo, Orangutan, Ocelot, Octopus? I don't know.
Orangina is the
if
last.
If O comes out during the eclipse, maybe they'll call it Android Eclipse. Android uh-oh. I like
Turn
that.
Back the sun.
Okay, that's right. Okay, so iOS 11. Now, I was just confused. iOS 11, much more likely to come out in about a month during
the eclipse. What will the Galaxy Note ship with?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh. Oh, that's a good question. Maybe that's the name of it. Android O, that's a good question. Yeah.
Probably not with O, probably with N.
Yeah.
As the Halt and Catch Fire edition.
Well spoken as an iPhone advocate.
I can't help myself.
Actually, if you're keeping track, I think Android just went ahead in the malware score. They've discovered in the Android store another significant malware exploit that was in 100 or more applications. They've killed them.
Fuchsia will fix everything, Leo. We're just waiting for Fuchsia.
Fuchsia. It's all about Fuchsia.
Yeah.
The fortune.
Future is Fuchsia.
The future is Fuchsia. Apple's iPhone 8 facial recognition tech may support, according to Apple Insider, Apple Pay, third-party apps, and multi-biometrics. What is multi-biometrics?
You're going to scan your retina there.
Scan the retina.
I think there's a lot of concern before Touch ID was released because we had those little rolling fingerprint sensors and people didn't really like them. They didn't have great experiences. And I think this is similar. And, you know, and Apple, it's hard to tell what's actually going to ship or not. You have to wait for the product. But this technology is really mature now. And you have infrared. You have laser. It can work in low light. It can work in normal light. It can differentiate twins. People are paranoid that, oh, no, my twin can unlock my phone. First, get a better relationship with your twin. But also, no, because there's all sorts of differences, you know, that accrue over time when you scan a detail at a granular level, even between twins, you know, from acne patterns to the negative space between different. I mean, anyways, the science is pretty good on this, and they take a pic. They're not a picture, but they do a scan. They match the points. They create math the same way they do with Touch ID. They store it in a secure enclave and they release a token. And I think, you know, if you do have anxiety over it, just wait until you see the demos and people start using it. And I think a lot of the anxiety will be alleviated.
I love the idea. Multi-biometrics means this as your choice, if you want to have it super secure, that you both have to have face recognition and fingerprint.
I always wanted that PIN plus Touch ID. I think enterprise would love that.
Oh, it'd be superb. Then you really would have a secure phone. Go ahead, Andy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just gotta say, I'm super concerned about face ID being given parity with Touch ID, because if you're in a sketchy situation, particularly with law enforcement, you just handed over your phone saying, oh yeah, that's fine, I've locked it. But then when they just go this in front of your face and they've unlocked it, and now because it's basically, the law is getting behind the idea that, again, the fingerprint, you don't have a right to not give a fingerprint. Do you have the right to go like this if Johnny Law wants to try to unlock your phone by simply looking at you?
I'd have to presume that, as is today, you could say, do not use biometrics, use a password.
Yeah, and there's two different
I'm just saying, this is something that's unprecedented. We haven't ever had this technology before. Just like as Renee wrote so nicely on iMore, don't ever buy the revision A motherboard of anything. I will never buy revision A or revision B of any security system before I see.
Or don't turn it on. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, all of this comes from that HomePod firmware. It's not exactly a leak. Apple put the HomePod firmware on a server.
It was a mistake.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of code, and people have been parsing that code. And apparently, Perl is the
yes.
code name or the variable name that refers to the Face ID.
I thought you were going to tell me it was written in Perl.
I don't think so. Pretty sure
Objective
not.
Perl, no.
AX resting Perl unlock is one of the functions, and the implication is resting means that the phone, we'd heard rumors that the phone might be able to do face recognition from a prone position.
It's not you, the phone. But the other thing, like to Andy's point, I mean, that is a really big concern. And you have two realities. You have the reality on the street and the reality on the court. And we've already seen that with Touch ID, where people either they took it from a corpse, they took it from someone who was sleeping, someone who was unconscious or drunk. They forced your hand onto the sensor. And what happens at that level, I mean, that's hard to control. And then you have whether that holds up in court or not. And I imagine the same thing will happen with Face ID and maybe with other biometrics like gait analysis.
Well, and Samsung's
voice ID and
S8 has face unlock. Not very easy to use. You have to hold it up and align
and you have
your
to
eyes.
Choose it in advance, right? Whether it's the iris scan or the face scan. Yeah.
And of course, iris is much more effective. The iris scan has been the hackers at the Chaos Computer Club in Berlin figured out how you could fake that with a photo that you take, from many feet away with a telephoto lens of somebody's eyes. You can then make it work. So I love the idea of double, because that would be, you get the eyes, but you still don't have the finger.
Or multi-factor, I have to have my Apple Watch on as well.
Oh, that'd be good.
I'd love all those capabilities.
I have to say is that as the months go by, I'm more inclined to turn off all kinds of biometrics and just use a super long unlock code, even though it's going to be inconvenient. I'm concerned about that sort of stuff.
And we believe, although there's some, the courts haven't really said this definitively, but we believe a password is treated as something you know and therefore protected as opposed
there's
to a fingerprint.
There's some vacillation. I think there was one court who said that they could compel you to put it in but not watch you do it. So they couldn't get the code, but they could force you to put it in. It's a very sketchy frontier.
Yeah, it's fluid still. Yeah. But there is a better defense against a password than there is against a fingerprint. It's accepted because you're required to give your fingerprint when you are booked. You're required to give them a hair sample if they want to do DNA. That's just accepted.
These are such personal devices. They are like there was an article about how these are basically bionics. They are your extended brain, and they should have every bit
of
protection.
I agree.
More than spousal, clerical, or lawyerly privilege. It should be 100% privilege that it is an extension of your brain, and you have the right not to incriminate yourself because otherwise they lose all utility.
I like the word clerical.
Clerical. I don't know.
I know what you meant to say, but clerical sounds
privilege.
Good. Clerical. It's
what
like clerical plus surgical.
Yeah.
It's clerical.
I don't word so good, Leo.
I'm a clergyman.
No, but it's something that as a society we're going to have to. I mean, there's going to be all these issues with technology that we're going to have to face that we just don't have precedent for.
Get ready. This is nothing compared to. I've been saying this a couple all week that compared to the biology revolution that's going to come here any minute now. CRISPR is this close to becoming a technology that's widely used, and if you can do gene editing on live humans.
Can I edit my genes after the fact?
Yes.
Then I'm interested.
Exactly.
Like the episode of Star Trek where the fluid bio creatures were more powerful than the Borg.
Right. Well, I mean, you can edit babies in vitro in the womb. You can.
I just want to edit out my desire to eat massive quantities
Me too.
Of chocolate.
Yes,
that's what I want.
Chocolate, everything. I just want to say.
So, Scott, you want to edit it so that vegetables taste like chocolate?
There you go. I'll take that.
Oh,
I'll take it.
I don't like this chocolate, but boy, broccoli.
Can
is
you imagine?
Good.
Can you imagine the new app store for this?
I think if it were possible, natural selection would have already done this. Like
yeah,
you
I
would
know.
Just. Why shouldn't your If all this stuff is so good for you, shouldn't you crave it? Why does
better with butter? Isn't that it was scarce? Like fat and sugar were scarce resources,
yeah.
So we learned to appreciate them more.
Yeah, I'm reading a wonderful book. Actually, listening to it, it's on Audible, called *Sapiens* by Harari. And one of the things he says is, if you were a hunter gatherer and you found a fig tree. You're going to eat all the figs before the baboon tribe comes along and wipes them off the tree. You just have to.
Yeah.
The problem is we've got fig trees in our refrigerator now. We've got everything in our refrigerator. And so you clear it out in case the baboon tribes invade your home.
Our biology didn't evolve as fast as our society.
Yeah, this is a good book, by the way. I'm really enjoying it. Yuval Noah Harari. That should be my pick of the week. We'll get to your picks of the week, actually, in just a second. And I know people are saying, but wait a minute, you haven't asked Scott Bourne what he does to make such beautiful pictures. That's going to be your pick. All right? I've decided. I have made a unilateral decision. You must reveal.
You're the boss. You're the host of the show.
You reveal to the world how he does it.
It's a secret.
Damn it. In just a moment. Oh, you mean you have to have talent? Oh, crap. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. This is something everybody needs. It is National Make-A-Will Month. So now, if you haven't done this, and I know young people, you know, young parents, new parents, this is something maybe you've thought, I probably should do this, but you're young, you're healthy, you feel good, you probably don't, I don't want to think about a will. Do it. Prepare for your family's future. And the thing is, it's so easy. LegalZoom wants you to do it so badly, they have put together a free estate planning kit that you can get just by going to LegalZoom.com/prepare. This is at no cost to you. Just prepare for your family's future with the most important thing you'll do this summer. You go to LegalZoom.com/prepare. You're going to get information. You are going to get discounts on LegalZoom products. So, of course, there's a little, you know, they want you to use it. And I tell you what, we did our wills. Lisa and I got the kit. And it really is a great way to do your will. If you want to do a living trust, you probably should also do durable power of medical attorney. That's really important. Everything you need is in this kit. Give you all the tools, whether it's a will or a trust, plus an estate plan checklist, an ebook, special discounts at LegalZoom. Now, I want to tell you, LegalZoom is not a law firm. That's actually the good part. They're not going to charge you $450 an hour. They're not a law firm. They help you, and they've done this for more than a decade, do the paperwork you need that a lawyer would charge you so much for. For instance, our LLC, when I started TWIT, LegalZoom, our trademarks, LegalZoom, and that saved me a lot of money. But there are times you need to ask a question of an attorney, and LegalZoom has put together a network of attorneys in all 50 states at pre-negotiated flat rate fees, so you're not going to pay that massive hourly fee to get your questions answered. LegalZoom.com/prepare to get your free estate planning kit. No obligation, just great resources to help you protect everything you care about. It's National Make-A-Will Month. LegalZoom.com/prepare. And if you need help, LegalZoom can give you all kinds of help, including a lawyer you can talk to on the phone for a very realistic price. LegalZoom.com/prepare. We thank them so much for their support and for helping me create TWIT way back when in 2005. Let's do our picks of the week. I'm going to end with you, Scott. Don't feel bad.
I'm fine.
I'm going to start with Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week. Andy, you're muted, did we mute Andy, did he mute Andy?
He muted.
Sorry, I had some saltines. I didn't want to.
I was wondering what that crunching and nibbling was. All right.
Oh no! Don't skip lunch, kids. Doesn't matter how busy you are. Don't skip lunch before a podcast. Yeah, two quick ones. One is Ulysses, a text editor for iOS and Mac that we've all recommended before, we've all loved before. I'm reminding everybody that's a really, really awesome app. It is sort of like the two best word processors for Mac and for iOS to me are Scrivener and Ulysses. Scrivener is when you really need the atomic writing tool. Ulysses is if you like what Scrivener does, being able to collect lots of documents and research together in a pile, but you don't want something quite as complicated. And I want to single out Ulysses this week because they changed their pricing model to a subscription model. They're getting a little bit of flack, actually a lot of flack for it from a lot of quarters. And I really want to say that I absolutely support them. They switched to a model where it's $5 a month or $40 a year, which to me, this is professional level software that you use to make money and to make your life better and easier and to be more productive and to be more creative. And if this is what they have to do to make sure that they can continue to pay themselves, continue to make their living and continue to support and improve Ulysses, I'm 100% for that. $40 a year is cheap for a piece of software of this quality. So I'm sometimes just, I'm it's not like I'm pleased that I have to spend $40 a year instead of just $20 and you own it. But I'm pleased if I can pay this money and as an act of gratitude towards people doing a tool that solves problems in my life that I rely on. I don't think that's an outrageous demand, and I'm kind of bothered that people are complaining about it and talking about it as though this is part of a really awful trend that they wish they could stamp out. The other thing I want to mention is Sling TV. I canceled my cable subscription last year, and one of the reasons why I was able to do that was because Sling.com, basically all the channels that I would have really missed out on, I can just get streaming on my Apple TV or on my phone or on pretty much on my Roku, any device that I want. They've just today announced a brand new feature. Normally you need an app to stream all these cable channels. Now you can just do it through any Chrome browser window. So really anything you got will work perfectly fine through this. I've had the service for about a year and a half now. It's worked great for me. It's not just live TV. It's also like if you go to the Food Network, you won't just get the Food Channel live. You also get like Chopped, the last two or three episodes that you can just tunnel down to, and here the last three episodes are available. So it kind of also made up for not having a DVR anymore. Why bother to record something if I can simply stream it on demand, so long as I remember sometime in the next two or three years. It's a great service, and it's become better by virtue of the fact that now I don't have to worry about having support for an app. I can just simply drop it into a window, and it works great. It's only the Chrome browser right now. It's only a beta right now, but I would expect that there's no special plugin. You don't have to download anything. It's just simply open web standards, so I'd be surprised if it doesn't come to Safari and other browsers very soon.
We should mention that if you are, as I am, an existing Ulysses owner, you have to download a new app, and it will walk you through a 50% discount for the annual, which makes it, what, $20 a year, which is, I think, not a lot.
Yeah,
if you use the app, it's worth it.
There are a lot of apps that I'm in the category of, if there were a button that would cause them to receive a box of money from me, I would click that button.
Yeah.
And this is definitely in that category.
I'm sorry, I'm getting 25%. I thought they said 50, but I'm getting 25% off. So it's $29.99 a year, $250 a month. So that's not bad. I guess I'm a, I don't know, maybe I paid for it so long ago, maybe I don't get the 50% off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm embarrassed at times like these because I try to be very careful and make sure that anything, whether it's hardware or software that I use professionally or personally, after I'm done reviewing it, I have to like buy a copy. But there are times where I'm like, oh, why can't I upgrade? Oh, that's right, because you've been using a free copy you got for review 4 years ago and you forgot to pay for it.
Yeah, I try to pay for this stuff. So actually, I'm restoring purchases now. It's still $30. So I guess that's the cost, but $30 a year is not that bad for something you use.
That's not bad.
By the way, that includes iOS and desktop app.
Yeah. And the transparency between the two, the ability to flip between an iPad Pro and your desktop is just so simple and so quick that it really is a power tool. It is a force expander, a force multiplier for people who have to take words out of your head and put them through your fingertips into a keyboard.
Renee Ritchie, pick of the week, sir.
Well, I just wanted to echo what you and Andy said first. I went through this with Adobe Creative Cloud. I used to only buy every second version of the Adobe apps that I used, and it worked out to be just a better deal for me. And I thought it. And then I went to 1Password subscription and Dropbox, and it does add up. But all of these apps, I use them so many hours out of so many days that it becomes an not insignificant, but a small amount of money for the amount of productivity and the amount of time that it saves me.
Yeah.
So that was the analysis I did.
Excellent.
There's a new 12 South product out called the Curve for the MacBook. And this is more a shout out to 12 South in general, because I love these boutique Mac accessory makers who love their craft so much. They make such a Studio Need is another one. But, you know, 12 South really Pat and Quill. We have an embarrassment of riches with these companies. And I've used some of the different elevation stands for the Mac, and this one, the design of it, I just found so simple and so appealing and so clever. And you know, this is one of those things where I'm going to order this, you know, immediately. And even if I only use it once or twice when I'm at a standing desk, you know, it's going to be well worth it for me, because it is just such a beautiful object. And I think they do that superlatively well, from the high-rise stands to, you know, a lot of the products they make. So this is just, it matches the new MacBooks. It looks great. It goes with sort of the thinness, the lines, the curves, and super happy with the results.
What's the website, 12 South?
12 South. I put it in the thing, I think.
Oh, well, let me look at
12south.com,
12 South. It's spelled out. It's all spelled out. TWELVESOUTH.com.
Just the simplicity and elegance just hit me in the right place.
Well, I could tell you one pick from Scott Bourne right away. That's that Great Olympus OMD EM1 Mark II camera.
I highly recommend.
Not cheap, but it's less expensive. It's about half the cost of a high-end DSLR.
One-third the cost of the DSLR it replaced in my case.
Yeah,
it's $2,000 and it replaced a $6,000 camera.
Right. Although you then have to buy all new lenses. And by the way, they've got some really nice pro lenses now.
I sold one Canon lens, the 800F56L. And purchased each and every piece of Olympus gear I need.
That'll give you an idea.
It's not
you
that
use good. The, what, how do you pronounce it, Zuiko?
I do not know. I just call them Olympus. I just call them Olympus lenses, okay?
Okay, you use those. All right.
They don't pay me to pronounce.
But
they pay
I'm going to say that that's not your pick.
No, my picks are related to what you said. People do ask me about my post-processing workflow. And of late, it's been almost 100% with a company called MacFun.
And we've talked about MacFun on this show many times.
Right.
I know Renee likes them. MacPhun.
And by way of disclosure, I am on the board of advisors.
That's brand new.
That's brand new.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it has nothing to do. I've been using the products for years.
And because I looked at your pictures and you said processed in Luminar, which is their kind of Adobe Lightroom replacement.
No, it's their Adobe Photoshop replacement.
Oh, it's even more than that. All right. Yeah. It's Photoshop. I said, well, if Scott Bourne's using it, and I've been using it. I love it.
It's extremely powerful. It's extremely easy to use. It's intuitive. If you've been put off by the length of time it takes to learn Photoshop,
yeah,
you'll love Luminar. There are presets. And by the way, go to photoplugins.net. I got a bunch of free ones.
But
you
do
can
you
use.
Have things like curves and layers? And
you do have layers. You do have curves. You know, there are a few things that are missing.
But
so
they're more photo-oriented stuff.
They're heavy-duty Photoshop user things that are missing.
Right.
But most photographers...
can't do LUT tables. And
no, you can't. But okay. Most photographers who watch this show are going to be able to do everything.
I've been very happy with
Luminar.
And so, frankly, I have to say, I first started using MacFun when their Aurora came out. That was something they did with Trey Ratcliffe. It's their HDR program. Trey moved from Photomatics to Aurora, and I thought, well, if Trey Ratcliffe can
he's the king of HDR.
So I've been using Aurora, and I love it.
And the big news for both these products is that they are both very quickly going to be available cross-platform on Windows and on Macintosh.
See, that blows me away, because that, I have to say, that... And yet another reason why I might move away from the Mac, because, you know, Lightroom, yeah, Photoshop, yeah, but to get, I missed Aurora, to be honest. I went back to the Mac for Aurora and Tonality Pro, their black and white filter.
And they have a bunch of other cool apps if you go to Mac.
They're
going
to have to
website.
Change their name, though. They can't be MacFun.
Yeah, that's being discussed probably. Anyway, I just tell you that people look at that eagle photo we showed.
Yeah.
And
that's done in...
That is processed in Luminar.
Luminar.
And it brings out the sharpening that exists in the existing photo.
Yeah, you can't fake sharpening.
You can't
something.
Fake sharpening.
Yeah.
But it does it better than anything else. I use Intensify. I use Snap Peel. I use all their products. But I use Luminar every day.
Now, Luminar can be a front end to Tonality and Noiseless.
Yeah, you can run other apps inside apps. And you can run Luminar, by the way, as a plug-in in Lightroom or Photoshop.
That's actually how I do it.
Yeah. You can run it. In is a plug-in. You can run it standalone.
Yeah.
I can tell you can try this stuff for free if you are looking for a photo solution. If you're one of those people who complains about the $10 a month that goes to Adobe, and I don't really think it's a big deal to pay Adobe $10.
No, it's well worth it. Yeah.
But if you are, then you can own this for around $50-$60, and
it's not a subscription.
No, it's not a subscription. In fact, they've updated it so many times since it came out that I can't even keep count. I started using it. I fell in love with it. I reached out to them. Now I'm on the board of advisors because I believe so much in the product. But give it a try. It's a lot of fun, too. You know, that's the other thing. Photography is supposed to be fun. And this helps make it fun. The presets are cool. And I hope people like it. And
can you tell them a couple of things?
I want to hear what you think.
Make it for Linux.
I'll be sure we run right up to the top of the chain on that one, okay?
Because I tell you what, that would be huge.
Okay.
Huge. And it doesn't have to be open source.
I'll speak to Dimitri about that soon.
They're from Ukraine.
Well, there's a U.S. side of the company and a Ukraine side of the company.
Because I would love to have all these tools. And then I also use Photo Mechanic as my ingest.
Oh, well, there's some interesting news coming soon, I'll just say about that.
Because... that's why I still use it as a Lightroom plugin, because what they don't give you is the managing all of your photos.
Well,
stuff.
What if?
What if
you could get a program that was as fast as Photo Mechanic?
Yeah.
That did a hierarchical look at what you had to do, and that automatically grouped all the photos you took at the same time you took them, so that you could very quickly A, B, C them out.
So hot.
And would keep track of all that for you, and then poured it right into Lumen. What if you could do that?
I would buy that right away.
Stay tuned.
I bought Photo Mechanic like last month for $150 just because Lightroom's so slow to process 40 megapixel images.
And that is a legitimate criticism of Lightroom. It's still slow.
Yeah.
And all this software is slow on an older computer, but I'm just telling you, there's cool things coming from this company. That's my pick of the week.
All right. MACPHUN. We've picked it before. We really like it. And I'm glad to know I know somebody on the advisory board. I have some advice for them. Thank you, Scott Bourne. So great to see you. Scott will be back in studio with us on Saturday for the new Screensavers. I will wear a Tommy Bahama shirt. He will wear a Tommy Bahama shirt. And you can choose the one you like best. So nice to see you.
Thank you, brother.
I'm so glad. And your health is good?
Everything's good. And I just want to say, you know, many of the folks that used to follow us when we worked together in the old MacBreak Weekly days reached out to me. And it's a family I love and dearly cherish.
If you're in the Bay Area on Saturday, tickets at twit.tv.
Come on by.
And join. We'll have a party.
Yeah.
We will have a party.
I really appreciate everybody that's watching. Thank you.
We adore you, Scott. And Scott told me off the air, but I'm going to say it. He's in the best health he's been in ever. Ever.
I'm strong as an ox.
He is. So we got a lot more Scott Bourne ahead.
And the IRS will never let me die.
I know. I know that story. But you were hanging by a thread for a while there.
I've had some medical problems, but I am strong as a bull.
I'm so pleased to hear that. It's kind of a miracle.
It is.
To be honest with you.
And the IRS will never let me die.
They've got ways. Andy Iannocco at the Chicago Sun-Times. Always a slice when you get that invitation to go to the Steve Jobs Theater. Just tell them you're going to bring a friend. Can I have a plus one? Just a plus one, okay?
I'll have a lens boy.
Yes. I'll be your lens boy, Andrew. Andy Iannocco is at the Chicago Sun-Times, but he's also online at CWOB.com, at IHNATKO on the Twitter. And don't forget to follow Andy I on Flickr, because he is another great photographer.
Thank you.
I love his images with his OMD, his Olympus.
And, of course, now he cheats. He has the Holsteins as models.
Yeah, little rubber cows.
And the squirrels.
Yeah, and the squirrels. Don't forget the squirrels. Rene Ritchie, he's from Montreal. He writes for iMore.com. He's an editor-in-chief over there, and he's a great friend. And it's so good to have you. How's the Pokemon Go? Did you get any? Have you been getting any legendary?
I got two of them, 100%, Leo.
Uh-oh.
I did a raid marathon on the weekend. We had a bunch of people, and we just did one after the other in rapid succession, and it was a lot of fun.
And 100% means they're full combat points?
I got 100% Moltres and 100% Zapdos. So I was the Electric Bird and the Fire Bird for non-Pokemon parlance.
He's 100% Zapdos, kids. Stay away from him. This guy is trouble.
No, it's a lot of fun. There was like 20 people, and we all went from park. We walked from park to park to park, just going, you know. And there were people who were neighbors, literally lived next door to each other, who had never met, which still blows my mind. Until they, hey, wait a minute, you're the guy who comes up from the house next to me, aren't you? Yeah, that is it. So it's amazing.
Well, I am so glad you're here as always.
Thank you.
I thank you for being here. I thank you all for watching. We did this show, if Leo's not late to work, at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. Please tune in and join us live at twit.tv/live. If you do that, join us in the chat room too, because you know, then you could talk back at irc.twit.tv. We also have a good-sized studio audience today. It's really nice to have you all.
Let's hear it for the studio audience.
Yeah. Email tickets at twit.tv if you'd like to sit and watch. We appreciate it. Thank you for coming. And if you can't be here in person, if you can't be here live, you can always download a copy on demand at your choice, your convenience. All of our shows, frankly, at twit.tv, but twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. And do me a favor. I know people no longer, you know, use iTunes for podcasts so much, but you have a podcast appliance of some kind, right? Whatever you use to listen to podcasts, if you would do me a favor and subscribe, that helps us, because it evens out the subscription numbers, and we know we've got you. And that way you will always have an episode when you go to work on Wednesday morning. Thanks for listening. But now I'm sorry to say it's time to get back to work because break time is over.